This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Graybar Sports Open Line on this Monday evening. Nate Gatter in for Matt Pauly with the Cardinals on their All-Star break. Day one of four of the MLB All-Star break. We'll be talking about the Cardinals limping into the break with just one win out of three against the Atlanta Braves over the weekend. We'll be talking a little bit about the Home Run Derby tonight in Atlanta to kick off those Major League All-Star activities. We'll touch on the Major League Draft and the Cardinals selections, which are coming to a close this evening and, in fact, have wrapped up. They took Chase Heath in the 20th round out of University of Central Missouri, I should say. Got a local guy with the 600th pick, their final selection in the Major League Draft in 2025. We'll talk to Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com during our second hour about how the Redbirds did, and there will be more discussion to come this week on the Cardinals busy draft, highlighted by the number 5 overall selection in the first round. We'll discuss the Wimbledon Tennis Championships that ramped up yesterday with a men's final between Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz. Sinner emerged as the gentleman's champion. Iga Świątek won on the women's side on Saturday. Mike Monaco, who called a number of the matches for ESPN, will join us to discuss at the bottom of this hour. But first, we have Jen Cease with us. You know her from here on KMOX, hosting City Spotlight. You know her from Y98 broadcasts of St. Louis City Soccer. You know her probably from being all over your social media at Jen Cease on air with her terrific city content. And Jen is here to talk about St. Louis City finally winning a game 2-1 over Portland yesterday. Jen, are you feeling a little bit better today getting to talk about a victory at long last?
Hey, Nate, thanks for having me. And yes, I love these conversations way better than the other ones.
I'm wondering who this team exactly is. I was looking at the stats. I'm seeing 53% possession. I'm seeing 9 shots on target, 20 shots in total, a couple of second half goals from the man of the match, Marcel Hartl. How much did you see watching the game that kind of jumped off the page, if you will, that looked different from what we've seen in the last few weeks or months?
Yeah, great to point out those stats. And another one, by the way, that sticks out to me is the passing for St. Louis City. And it's just been creeping up since David Critchley took over as caretaker head manager, now interim head manager. You know, he was not a fan necessarily of low possession rate. Of course, you have to have good possession. You have to have quality possession that leads to something. But I've really liked seeing that number creep up along with the number of passes that City's making and connecting. So I would think when I look back and I watched again the game and watched the highlights from the game from the TV rather than just up in the booth, you know what sticks out to me is dynamic movement and dynamic passing and, like, again, diagonals. When I look at a lot of those goal attempts, whether they went in or not, there was checking back by Klaus and Hartle. There were diagonal runs, overlapping passes, give and goes. It was just a much more dynamic movement than we saw under Olaf Melberg, where we saw a front line that really didn't move very much. So a lot of movement from this team, which creates, which is really what soccer is all about, right? It's a sport of creativity where you do have kind of set plays, but the rest of the game is left to creativity of the players. And I really like seeing it grow with St. Louis City right now.
Obviously, a big part of the story of this season, when it's written even now and when it's written in the history books, is going to be about Olaf Melberg and the style that he brought to City that maybe was not what any of us on the outside expected. Maybe from the sounds of the press conferences after he was relieved of his duty, wasn't even exactly what the powers that be at City and Lutz Fahnenstuhl and Diego Gigliani necessarily expected. And that has played a big part in putting City where they are. But another part of it has been the injuries and just the consistent inconsistency of who's available, who's on the field. And that's made the job for David Critchley in this interim role even more difficult. Do you see some hope on the horizon, a little light at the end of the tunnel in City being able to establish a little bit more consistency, not only in the message that's coming all the way from Lutz Fahnenstuhl through David Critchley into the dressing room, but also in just the 11 players they're able to put on the field at any given time?
Yeah, you read my mind. What I was thinking of injuries as you were leading to that question, because not only does it make it hard on the coaching staff to figure out who's there, it makes it hard on the players on the pitch and even those that are on the bench, not really necessarily knowing what their role is on any given game. And again, I know soccer is a sport of creativity, but in general, you kind of know your role. And Marcel Hartl sticks out to me. He's a player who's been asked to really change what he does over this past, gosh, has it even been a year he's been with the club almost? He's gone from being really involved creatively in the attack to really then having to cover back on defense when Wallen was out for a while, when Leuven's been in and out of play. And it's been nice to see him really kind of find, he really had a role last night, and that was simply to be creative in the attack. Everybody else's job, Wallum and Ostrox, were there to win the ball. He got to focus on creativity and attacking, and it was really nice to see that. So with Orozco coming in, who's been performing really nice from the second team, and players starting to come back, it was nice to see Ostrox step into his own, and hopefully we'll get a few more back here in the next few weeks. City's going to be soon on a break once again. Having that makes it easier also on the players on the pitch to know what I'm there to do. Is it what I normally do?
It's funny you saying that about Marcel Hartl. Almost feels like deja vu in how we were talking about Edouard Leuven before he had this sort of extended spell on the sidelines, but how much of last season was defined by him having to drop into a deeper and deeper and deeper role where he just wasn't able to do so many of the things that made him impactful in the attacking half of the field in 2023. Now, St. Louis City, even with the win, still second bottom in the Western Conference, just 18 points from 22 games, 9 points back of Austin, who have the ninth and final playoff spot. At this stage, a run to qualify for the playoffs and fulfill that promise from Carolyn Kindle in the preseason is extremely unlikely. Not impossible, but it is very unlikely. What is your sense about where the mindset of this team is? What is there for them in the run-in of this season? And frankly, what's there as well for David Critchley as he tries to make his case for potentially the full-time job?
That's a great question. You know, I look at the standings too, and I see our next opponent, of course, they're traveling to Dallas. It's FC Dallas. We're just one win away from matching them in where they are at number 13. St. Louis City is sitting at 14. I know that runs like this tend to be, like you said, not completely impossible, kind of off the cuff, but the Blues did it. So it does happen like that. When you talk to the players, you Rich, they are very, very much of the mindset that if we make the playoffs, everything resets, right? You can have something completely different come out of the playoffs. They are very much focused on the fact that point by point, win by win, and if they keep playing the way that they have been, they've been very proud even though they haven't had the results, that's been the frustration, right? But they've been very proud of the performances when they go back and they look at video review. And, you know, a lot of arms go up in the video review, like, why aren't we getting the results? Because what we want to do has been what we've wanted to do. But David Critchley continuing to focus on that field tilt, he likes to talk about that. I think in the first half against Portland, we had Stateless City had a 72% field tilt, yet went into halftime down a goal. So if they continue going in that direction and now getting more numbers into the box, getting more numbers higher and confronting the lines higher, then I think they can continue to start to steal points. If they can get a win at FC Dallas, I think that really makes the case for them to continue.
It's a good point that you make, though, about the mindset and how things have changed under David Critchley, because I think even if the results up until yesterday haven't changed dramatically, I think supporters, the people who really go to the games and who follow the team closely, I think have already taken some encouragement from the fact that the style of play has been so much more appealing, even for a neutral fan. The games under Olaf Melberg were just not enjoyable to watch, and they are moving in the right direction in that regard. In showing that the philosophy of this club, especially if it's tweaked some of the ways that David Critchley has tweaked it, can still be entertaining in the way that people once found it entertaining.
I agree. And so this is going to be maybe an unpopular opinion for those of us who really liked it under Bradley Carnell. I loved talking to Bradley Carnell. I loved his enthusiasm. But that kind of chaotic press that we just know wears on players' legs. I know they're sitting at the top of the Eastern Conference right now, so Philadelphia Union's doing well. But we've seen what it does to players, and sometimes it's really not sustainable over the long haul. I like Critch's style better. I like the blend of the fact that we're not just throwing defense to the wolves, right, for that chaotic press. But we're also trying to keep that energy and break lines higher and make sure we're pushing up and being brave. I really like that kind of, I feel like it's a nice blend of sophisticated soccer with that excitement that the casual fan might be a little bit more excited about. So I'm enjoying seeing it grow with St. Louis City. And it was nice to hear David Critchley talk about this last week of training. Hopefully it will go into this week, of course, too, of being not only the most energetic, but one of the other things that stood out to him was the player's quality on the ball, the quality of that first touch, the ability to win back the second ball is climbing and climbing for this team. So really need to see that continue if they're going to try and make the playoffs.
Jen, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much. And hopefully some more victories and some more intrigue to come for City this year.
Thanks, Nate. Great to talk to you.
That's Jen Cease. You hear her on the City Spotlight here on KMOX and on Y98 broadcast of City Soccer. Follow her on Twitter or X or Instagram or anywhere else at Jen Cease on air for all of that City content. Wimbledon discussion when we return. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts, Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Graybar Sports Open Line continues. Nate Gatter in for Matt Pauly on this Monday evening. We're going to be talking Wimbledon now. We'll be joined in just a few minutes by Mike Monaco of ESPN, who helped to call the tournament on the network along with Chris Fowler. And then we will talk just before the top of the hour about the Home Run Derby. My producer, Kyle Sixta, will join us for that. We'll talk about some of the names involved and make some predictions on Kyle really will make predictions. I don't know. My predictions will just be based on vibes, I think. But we'll make some predictions on the Home Run Derby that'll be getting underway at 7 o'clock in Atlanta. And then in the second hour, we'll turn our attention back to the Cardinals. Talked about them for the last hour with Bernie Miklas. You can hear that discussion and everything else that we do here on the free Odyssey app. In podcast form, you can search the Redbird Rush Hour. You can follow that. You can follow the Sports Open Line. Of course, everything that we do live is streamed as well on X/Twitter, and you can see it on Facebook, on YouTube, anywhere else. You can submit your comments and questions there. You can also call us at 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900. You can leave a talkback message on the Odyssey app. You can leave a voicemail with us here at KMOX. You can also tweet us at KMOX Sports. Or if you want, you can ask nicely, and I'll give you Kyle Sixta's personal cell phone number, and you can contact him that way. Whatever is easiest, that's what we will do to bring the show to you. Wimbledon final on the gentleman's side yesterday. Jannik Sinner in four sets over Carlos Alcaraz. Iga Świątek won the ladies singles on Saturday. She smacked American Amanda Anisimova 6-0, 6-0 in under an hour, the first straight set victory for in a women's final in 114 years at Wimbledon. We will talk about all of that, as well as a couple of the higher seeded American women, Coco Gauff the 2 seed, Jess Pegula the 3 seed, both going out in the first round in what was a bloody first couple of days at Wimbledon for the seeded players. All of that discussion with Mike Monaco after the break. You're tuned into Graybar Sports Open Line on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line continues. Nate Gatter back with you in for Matt Pauly. Thanks so much for making us a part of your Monday evening. We are joined now by Mike Monaco of ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter/X at Mike Monaco _. You might know him from college football, college basketball, college baseball, including the Men's College World Series on ESPN. Now you might know him from tennis. Just wrapped up his second year contributing to the play-by-play on ESPN's coverage from the Wimbledon Championships. Mike, thanks so much for being with us when you didn't make it back to this side of the Atlantic all that long ago.
Yeah, my pleasure, Nate. Thanks for having me, man. Yeah, such a special event. I mean, as prestigious as it appears, I have found it to be that way. Like you said, my 2 years being there, and an honor to be a small part of the coverage over there and just experience how spectacular that is.
Obviously, the headlines over the last 24 hours are focusing on the gentlemen singles final that we watched yesterday. But I want to go back first as we focus initially on the ladies' side singles, going back to the very beginning of the fortnight when there was all this carnage on both the men's and women's sides, frankly. 23 of the 64 total seeded players crashed out in the first round of the men's and women's singles, which was a tournament record since they started seeding 32 players on both sides in 2001. And a couple of high-profile American women, the number two seed Coco Gauff, the number three seed Jess Pegula, were both among the victims of those early upsets. How did that kind of set the tone, not just their departures, but in general, the sort of upside-down nature of those early rounds set the tone for, in particular, how the first week went, but the entire championships?
Yeah, I think it really did. I mean, it opened up the women's draw. And, you know, 9 years in a row, we've seen this play out where there's a different champion from the year before. And it kind of felt like it was trending that way. And we can get into a bigger picture discussion of why that happens at Wimbledon in particular, maybe compared to some of the other majors. But yeah, it certainly opened things up right away. I mean, in a span of what, 9 hours, Coco Gauff and Jess Pegula both went out, and Pegula went out in less than an hour to kind of start that day. And then, you know, the night gets capped with Coco Gauff going out against a very capable opponent, mind you, and Diana Yastremska. But that did set the tone, like you said, and we just kind of saw that play out really the whole way. So yeah, a real fascinating women's draw in particular, and we've come to learn that this is kind of the way it goes there on the grass with the short lead up season, and it led to some really exciting finishes. And I mean, look, even from the semis to the women's championship match to the women's final, like, Amanda Anisimova looked so good against Aryna Sabalenka, and then, you know, we all saw what happened on Saturday, and she goes down against someone as convincing as Iga Swiatek, and you see a final that played out at a major and something you hadn't seen since, what, the 1980s, going six love. But yeah, just another testament to the way the sport is.
It's funny that you mentioned that Pegula going out in under an hour, and that was, of course, the theme of Saturday's final when Swiatek beat Anisimova 6-love, 6-love, as you mentioned. First major final on the women's side since 89, first Wimbledon women's final in 114 years to go love and love, and only took 57 minutes. What a whirlwind for Anisimova. I mean, it still has to go down as the highlight of her career to have gotten to this final, to have beaten Aryna Sabalenka the way that she did in the semifinals just a couple of days prior, but then to turn around and lose in that way. Ultimately, a big disappointment for a woman who benefited tremendously from some of the early chaos and how it opened things up for her.
Definitely. I mean, the way that played out was crazy. And look, it's a great credit. Like, you talk about all the different factors there. You know, Sabalenka, like, looked as convincing as possible. And she hasn't played there a lot in the last few years. Like, being a player from Belarus and, you know, Russians and Belarusians being banned there. Her shoulder injury last year with kind of the lat muscle. So things that opened up for her. Amanda Anisimova, like, her story so well documented, and how things opened up for her, you know, 13 seed in her own right. But to get to that point was obviously very impressive. And then, yeah, Iga Swiatek, on the flip side of things, like, I think back, Nate, to the match she had against Katie McNally, the American who in her own right has come back from injuries, a Cincinnati native. That was, what, the second round for Iga Swiatek? Loses a set, like, that could have been very different. So, yeah, to kind of expand it out with the three of them, like, again, fascinating how the draw shakes out. And that's what you get with majors. Like, it's you know, seeds held on the men's side, for sure. But on the women's side, man, it just takes, like, things going your way and getting hot. And you know, once you felt Iga Swiatek get through that match against McNally, like, man, she was off and running from there. And I think these majors can take that form over 2 weeks as well. Like, you get hot, you know, we talk about it in other sports, like, get hot at the right time and then boom, like, ride that for the rest of the tournament, for the rest of the fortnight.
Turn our attention to the men's side, where it always felt like a collision course, not without its own chaos, right? I mean, Sinner benefited tremendously from an injury that allowed him potentially to avoid going out earlier in the tournament as well. I mean, not early in the tournament, but before getting to the final, certainly. And so maybe he wouldn't have been there in a different world, but it always felt like the most likely outcome was Sinner and Alcaraz again in the Wimbledon final. Alcaraz bringing in his 20-match unbeaten streak, then winning the first set. And Sinner just turned it around on him. And Sinner, at the level that he reached yesterday, looked, to my eye, borderline unbeatable.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the level, Nate, that we've seen. We've come to learn that and expect that on the hard courts in particular. And, man, to see it on the grass was really impressive. Like, you know, the Grigor Dimitrov situation for Jannik Sinner in, what, the fourth round? Like, it's well documented. That could have gone another way for sure. And unfortunately for Grigor Dimitrov, he gets hurt. But by the same logic, like, and Sinner comes out and he's playing, you know, with the elbow question mark against Ben Shelton, about as convincing tennis as you could expect from anyone at Wimbledon. He looked really good against Ben Shelton. He looked really good against Novak Djokovic. And again, Novak Djokovic, you know, was he compromised? If he says so, certainly looked that way. I was doing his match in the quarters against Flavio Caboli, and it happened right at the end for Novak Djokovic. So, but still, like, Sinner played at such a high level. So I agree with you. And I think it's really impressive because it kind of felt like it was Sinner's going to dominate the hard courts, and Alcaraz has asserted himself on the clay and on the grass. And these guys are still so young and things can change for sure. But it's a testament to Sinner that he played at that high of a level on the grass against Carlos, who was going for 3 years in a row. But man, Sinner's scary. Like, the way he moves at his size and getting in and out of the corners and just getting to balls, and then the pace with which he hits his shots, like, his ground strokes, man, are just coming at incredible pace. Like, Ben Shelton talked about it after their match in the quarterfinals. Ben Shelton was like, man, you don't see that pace from other people. So Jannik Sinner, it's just really impressive what he does. And he hits with great depth, but he also hits with good margin. Like, he is hitting at such a commanding pace that it really affords him the opportunity, when you pair that with his margin, to make mistakes and to, you know, force opponents into mistakes. So, yeah, I mean, he looked about as good as it gets, and what a match that was yesterday.
Mike Monaco of ESPN is with us talking Wimbledon championships. He contributed to the play-by-play for ESPN over the fortnight at the championships. You can follow him on Twitter or X at Mike Monaco _. You know, Mike, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but I saw a tweet today that I've been thinking about for the rest of the day. And it said, predict the next men's player to win a Grand Slam, not named Jannik Sinner or Carlos Alcaraz. Because you're dealing with two guys younger than 25 who are playing at this level and who often look dominant against anyone other than each other. Not always. Alcaraz certainly is prone to drop the sets here and there. Sinner, as mentioned, maybe was good injury luck or bad Dimitrov injury luck away from going out earlier in the championships. But guys who are, for the most part, clear and convincing as the top two in the world right now at such a young age, who's out there to be the one who steps up and challenges them in a major?
It's so scary to think about. It's a great question. I had that posed to me as well recently. I mean, Sinner 23, Alcaraz 22. Like, we said it at one point, we were doing a two box of Alcaraz and Joao Fonseca, 18-year-old. And that's not my answer necessarily. But I said on air, I said it to Patrick McEnroe, like, we could have fun watching this for the next 15 years, right? Like, sign up for this. And that is the term that you're talking about with these two guys and their dominance in this sport. You know, Zverev is, what, 3 in the world? He was the 3 seed. He went out early. For me, it's not Zverev. You know, 4 in the world right now is Taylor Fritz. And he was seeded, what, 5th? Raper was 4th? I think for me, it's probably Taylor Fritz. Like, he's not this incredible athlete, right? Like, in the way that Carlos and Sinner, in different ways, but in the way that both of them are. Taylor Fritz, not necessarily that. But, man, I'll be darned if that guy doesn't squeeze every ounce of his ability out of himself and look for answers on ways to improve. And if he isn't such a thoughtful thinker of the sport and the match when he's in it and in those moments, I'm going to take my chances with him. Like, guy who's been to the final before, right? U.S. Open, guy who got to the semifinal here, played a pretty good match in the semifinals as well. Look, you think about injuries, like you think about stuff like that. And to your point in your question, like anything can happen like that. And, you know, upsets can happen. We saw that, of course, like you said, over these 2 weeks. So I think it can open up, and I don't think all hope is lost for someone else to wrangle one from these guys. But look, it's seven in a row, and they're only going to get better. And they're still only entering, like, their athletic and mental toughness and, you know, sports psychology prime and all those things. So it's scary. And, you know, I certainly would take the two of them against the field going into any major by a long shot. But you asked me to pick a name, and I would say Taylor Fritz.
Yeah, you're nothing if not a good sport with answering the question. I got one more for you, unrelated to tennis, even though that's why we have you here, because you know, you are well versed in Major League Baseball with your fill-in opportunities for the White Sox and the Red Sox on television, as well as some Major League Baseball on ESPN, and in particular your college baseball work on ESPN, which has included the Men's College World Series in the last couple of years. So you are very familiar with the Tennessee Volunteers and Tony Vitello and some of the pitchers that they have produced. The Cardinals, who obviously are king here in St. Louis, took a couple of them with their first two picks, Liam Doyle and Tanner Franklin. In particular, I think the Doyle selection at number five has people really fired up because they weren't necessarily confident that Doyle was going to be there coming in before the surprise picks at number one, and in particular number two, that kind of changed how the top part of the board shook out. What stands out to you? What should Cardinals fans be most excited about with Doyle in particular?
I love the guy. I got to spend like 15 minutes with Liam the day before one of his starts in the postseason in May, in late May. He's really impressive, man. It's a ton of confidence. It's a ton of emotion on the mound. Like, I referred to him as like a madman at one point in one of his outings, in a good way. Like, he's a guy who, in my opinion, could rocket up an organization if the Cardinals wanted to and be a part of the bullpen in really short order. You know, I think, like, the question will be secondary pitches in command for him. He's got two solid secondaries as it is already right now. The one for him that he said to me, like, has always been the work in progress is the curveball. It's more slurvish. It's like 11 to 5. He says in his own right it's a work in progress. You know, he was able to get some swing and miss with it late in the year, but that's a big key for him. Like, if he can add that to what he's got, a mixture, he calls it, between a slider and a cutter, and then a splitter as well. It's like a true split. If he can add that and be a four-pitch guy with the, you know, the breaking ball, because everything's hard otherwise. It's fastball, it's splitter, it's the slider cutter that I just mentioned. If he can, you know, really find a way to throw a curve, and not saying he needs that. Like, you can be successful with three pitches and certainly at a high velo. We've got guys like that in Major League Baseball who have success that way with hard stuff. But I think that's a big thing for him. But, man, there's so much to like with the moxie on the mound, the fastball as well. Like, he throws that fastball two-thirds of the time in the college game, and he's got really good induced vertical break, and that's real baseball nerdish stuff, but it basically just means it holds its carry. So, like, that fastball, you think it's coming down or staying at a certain level, and, well, it actually stays higher than that and appears to be elevating. So he's really good with that four-seam fastball. I think the body has continued to get better. Like, he felt like he unlocked a lot of strength and conditioning stuff this year. His diet was very different this year than it had been at his first two stops over his first 2 years of college. So I do think there's more like development runway there with him. And he's such a super competitor. And you would expect that with anyone, you know, pick top 10, top 15 in the draft. But I do think he is such a super competitor that, like, I would bet on him to achieve whatever the fullest potential is for him. But yeah, strike throwing and the curveball, I think, are the two things to watch in my mind.
Mike, we appreciate your time so much. Congratulations on everything that you've been up to recently, and best of luck with what's to come.
Nate, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Mike Monaco of ESPN with us on Graybar Sports Open Line. You can follow him at @MikeMonaco_. You can see him across, it feels like, just about every property that ESPN has. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get Kyle Sixta's home run derby prediction officially. Officially, he's going to be locked in before the Derby starts in just about 15 minutes tonight. That's still to come, and of course, we'll continue talking about the Cardinals draft with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com later on in our second hour. Maybe touch on a little bit of soccer as well after our conversation with Jen Cees earlier. All of that still to come and more. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, ESW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Not tonight. Nate Gatterin for Matt Pauley for Gray Bar Sports Open Line. It continues on this Monday evening. Thanks so much for being with us. You can be part of the conversation at 314-436-7900 or by leaving us a comment on any of our stream options across YouTube, X, and Facebook. You can also leave us a voice message using the TalkBack feature on the free Odyssey app, or you can go back and listen to anything that you've missed, including our St. Louis City conversation with Jen Cees of KMOX and Y98, our Wimbledon Championships discussion with Mike Monaco of ESPN that included some bonus Liam Doyle content at the very end for you. I thought that was a really thorough breakdown that Mike gave us, and he is as embedded in the college game as probably anybody. I guess technically he's ESPN's number two play-by-play voice for college baseball, but that's only because Carl Ravitch and the Sunday Night crew come in and act as the number one crew when they get to the World Series in Omaha. But short of the College World Series, Mike Monaco's team, usually with some combination of Kyle Peterson or Ben McDonald, and or Ben McDonald is the number one crew in college baseball. And obviously Tennessee over the last several years has been, you know, one of the top teams in college baseball in terms of the eyeballs that they're drawing for, you know, some different reasons, partially because they can be divisive at times with the personality that they take on and the way they aren't afraid to butt heads and show that emotion. It's one of the things that's going to be really interesting. It is sort of outside of the tangible numbers and the stuff and all that we're going to talk about with Liam Doyle, is how that emotion, and you heard Mike Monaco mention the emotion with which Liam Doyle pitches, how that's going to translate to professional baseball. Historically speaking, some of the more demonstrative reactions that are becoming common among top pitchers in college baseball, and in particular are well known among Tennessee players, are not normally favorites of veterans in pro baseball, especially at the major league level. But at the same time, obviously the game is changing. And over the last 10, 15 years, a little bit more of that has been not just tolerated, but celebrated in the major league game. I do think there's going to be a line there that has to be walked, because, you know, college baseball pitchers are sometimes not only demonstrative and vocal, but very confrontational in how they do that. And certainly there are many worse offenders than Liam Doyle, but he is a guy who pitches with a lot of emotion. And it would be interesting, especially if he is fast-tracked to the major leagues and doesn't get a lot of time in pro baseball before pitching on the big league stage. It would be interesting to see how that plays out. But I thought Mike gave great breakdowns as well of the stuff, both the positives with that fastball and the induced vertical break. He talked about how it keeps its plane and appears to be rising, which is such a critical piece of those high velo guys now with the, I don't want to say uppercut, but the launch angle emphasis that is so present. You have to be able to beat those swings up in the zone. It's not as simple as just keep the ball down and get ground balls anymore. So that is so key. At the same time, part of the reason that the critics of Doyle talk about him as a bullpen option, which I think is overblown and premature, but part of the reason that comes out is because there are questions as to the depth of his arsenal. What are the quality of those secondary pitches? Are there enough of them? Can he develop a third secondary pitch? And can he have at least one, if not two, of those that are genuine plus pitches to go with a fastball that I think everyone is confident will play at the major league level? Talk a little bit more about that and the Cardinals draft class on the other side of our break. To start the second hour, we'll also visit with Brian Walton at 7:20. He writes for thecardinalnation.com, covering mainly the Cardinals minor league system, and he will be all over this draft class for the Cardinals that just recently concluded this evening with their 20th round selection. Before we do any of that, let's talk about the Home Run Derby, which is going to start in just a few minutes in Atlanta, and that gives us a chance to bring in producer Kyle Sixta, who is going to have to make his choice as to who will win the Home Run Derby this evening. The options are the following eight players: the Nationals' James Wood, Athletics outfielder Brent Rooker, Junior Caminero of the Rays, O'Neill Cruz of the Pirates, Minnesota's Byron Buxton, Jazz Chisholm Jr. of the Yankees, Major League home run leader Cal Raleigh of the Mariners, and the Braves' hometown boy, first baseman Matt Olson. Kyle, who do you like and why?
Nate, it's tough. I think Bernie made a lot of really good points on the Redbird Rush Hour earlier when you asked him this question, and I don't want to be a copycat here, but I really do agree with a lot of what he said. I think James Wood is the favorite for me. He's just has such effortless power, and like Bernie said, Truist Park is really an advantage for left-handed hitters when it comes to a home run derby. You have the chop house right out in right field, and you're just able to smoke homers out there in Atlanta. And I think James Wood, he just has such effortless power, right? I mean, line drives, he can hit it to anywhere in the field and get it out of there. I'm really bummed that Ronald Acuna Jr. isn't in this home run derby. I think Matt Olson is great. I think we could see him go very far, but Acuna in his home stadium would have been really cool. He might have been my pick if it weren't for the back issues that he had, but I do think I'm going James Wood. If I was going to go with a right-handed hitter, I like Brent Rooker maybe as a sleeper pick, but Wood is going to be really fun. I'm interested to see how O'Neill Cruz does. You know, he hits a baseball harder than pretty much anyone in the whole world. I mean, he hit 122.9 miles an hour this year. So it'll be really interesting to see what these guys do. I'm going James Wood.
I'm going to go with the exit velo king, O'Neal Cruz. That's going to be my my official pick. I think the concern for O'Neal Cruz would be that maybe the consistency of the launch angle won't be there,
right,
and that in a home run derby you care a little bit less. There's some value, you know. There's a little bonus in hitting a, you know, one 425 feet, getting those long homers. That's something that they've brought in to the competition over the last several years, but there's greater value in being able to consistently park him in the seats and getting that launch angle, and that would worry me a little bit with him, but I'm going to go ahead and bet on that 122.9.
I think that's fair. And how did we not mention Cal Raleigh, right?
Right.
I mean, he's the number one guy in this derby who has the most homers, the home run leader, and we didn't even mention him. He's obviously a very good candidate as well. It's interesting, though, with, you know, the time rather than who can just hit the furthest homers. That maybe is a format I would like Raleigh in. But, you know, these guys that are a bit younger and, you know, can do it maybe a little bit longer are who I'm going to go for.
Cal Raleigh is marginally the favorite in Vegas. O'Neal Cruz had been third on the board. He's now second, probably because they heard me pick him, and that just inspires.
I think so.
All the bookmakers react to that. James Wood is third. Big drop-off after those three. So Vegas views those three as the top options. We'll take a break. The news is coming up on the other side. We'll dive into that Cardinals draft class, visit with Brian Walton, talk some soccer as well on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Nate Gatterin for Matt Pauley tonight as we start the second hour of our Graybar Sports Open Line. I'll be with you the next three nights as well. We're going to be talking more Cardinals draft in 2025. Had that number 5 overall selection they used on Liam Doyle out of Tennessee. They have now made their final selections. They picked 21 players in total over 20 rounds, plus a competitive balance round B in between rounds 2 and 3 when they made their third selection. We will talk to Brian Walton in about 13 minutes about the Cardinals draft class. He covers the St. Louis Cardinals minor league system, among some other things, for thecardinalnation.com. I think we'll also touch on the Club World Cup, which wrapped up yesterday in New York / New Jersey at MetLife Stadium with Chelsea beating PSG. Obviously, this is a soccer city, and that's only become even more true since the addition of St. Louis City SC and the U.S. men's national team rolling through here, and women's for that matter, but the U.S. teams rolling through City Park with some frequency now, Energizer Park, over the first few years of its existence, including the U.S. men getting what turned out to be their last win in the Gold Cup in the semifinals before they lost to Mexico down in Houston last week. Bill McDermott's going to join us tomorrow night, and we're going to talk a little bit more about not only the Club World Cup, but also the U.S. men's national team and some more around the soccer world. But I think it'll be interesting to get any comments from all of you if the Club World Cup was even on your radar at all. I mean, FIFA went really, really hard in marketing that tournament, and whether that has moved the needle at all as a precursor to the World Cup proper coming to the United States next summer. And how, if at all, the excitement level changed for you, up, down, didn't register one way or the other. That'll be part of our discussion in this second hour as well. If you want to be part of any conversation, Cardinals, soccer, anything else that's on your mind, 314-436-7900 is the number to call. You can also get to us on the free Odyssey app using the TalkBack feature. You can leave a comment on our streams across any of your social media outlets, or you can tweet us at KMOX Sports. So that Cardinals draft class, it is highlighted by Liam Doyle, the number 5 overall selection. A couple of Tennessee Volunteers in the first three choices for the Cardinals. Doyle at number 5. Tanner Franklin, even harder throwing right-hander, at number 72. He stands at 6'5", 225. Doyle, 6'2", 220. He slimmed down some, though, from that left-hand side. You heard Bernie make mention of it. You heard Mike Monaco make mention of it during our first hour, which we spent talking mostly about the Wimbledon championships, at least with Mike, but also got some good insight on Liam Doyle, a player he has covered frequently during Doyle's Tennessee career. And Tony Vitello talked about that as well during the MLB draft. He was on television being interviewed during some of the coverage and talked about Doyle's commitment to getting himself physically in the place that he needed to be to take that final step. And did he ever? 2025 SEC Pitcher of the Year, can touch 99 miles an hour from the left side. That is going to draw significant attention. The Cardinals selected just one high school player out of their 21 draft choices, Ryan Mitchell out of Houston High School in Tennessee. So, in fact, the first three picks were all Tennessee kids in some way or another. Mitchell, a high school outfielder, 18 years old, born in January of 2007. January of 2007. If and when he does make it to the majors, he certainly will be the first Cardinal born in 2007 to do so. All the other guys, 2003, 2004 birthdays on the college players, but Mitchell, born in 07. He is a high school kid. You heard Bernie talk about him and relaying during the Redbird Rush Hour earlier, and you can go back and hear that on the Free Odyssey app in podcast form. He was referencing, relaying, really, some comments from Keith Law, who is a longtime MLB draft analyst, does it in as much or more depth than anybody, and talking about how Mitchell kind of fits, in many ways, the Cardinals ethos, which and what seems to be the Heim Bloom Cardinals ethos of the future, in concert with Randy Flores, the director of scouting, that they want the really high contact bats and the upside that comes with that. And Mitchell fits into that category. All the rest, college bats taken in this draft class by the Cardinals. Doyle at the top of it is the most interesting. So is Franklin. I wonder if there is a chance, you know, we've talked about how quickly both of those guys could get to the major league level. Franklin, in part because he probably projects as a reliever, and Doyle because maybe if they wanted to, they could bring him up very quickly as a reliever and make that part of the broader plan for him to ultimately start. As a general rule, I don't love that approach. It just feels a little funky to me. Obviously, starting pitcher and relief pitcher are still fundamentally the same thing and that you're still pitching, but you would never, sometimes you have to, but you would never intentionally develop a guy as a second baseman, bring him to the majors as a second baseman, saying, oh, well, we'll just do that for the rest of this year. We'll do it for a year and we'll see how it goes. I mean, we've seen firsthand that when the Cardinals have had to do weird things positionally with top prospects, it hasn't gone the best, right? I mean, what did it do to the development of Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman to throw them the curveball of not being able to play third base because all of a sudden they were blocked by Nolan Arenado? I'm not saying that either of them would be all-stars right now if not for that. And obviously, again, being a position player, being a pitcher, different things. It's not like the mechanics have to change of pitching just because you're a reliever versus a starter. But the mindset does change. The preparation does change. A lot of the mental and physical approach is different. And I wonder if... I also think... So this is maybe... I don't know. There's a certain tension between these two opinions, maybe. The first thing I think is if you want a guy to be a starter, have him be a starter. And if he gets to the majors a year later, he gets to the majors a year later. Who cares? The control clock hasn't started. Doesn't make much difference to me. The other side of it is, if you bring a guy up as a reliever and he's great at it, why does he have to be a starter? If he's pitching 70 times a year in high leverage situations and impacting baseball games, I felt this way about Jordan Hicks. I didn't and don't understand why there was such a push to make him into a starter. Great, your reward is that then some team, in this case San Francisco Giants and now the Boston Red Sox, but the Giants gave him the contract, had to give him $44 million over 4 years, and now he's right back in the bullpen. So now what they have is a supremely overpaid relief pitcher. Much in the way, not that it's so much fault of his own, but much in the same way Steven Matz, frankly, is a very overpaid relief pitcher. He's effective, but if Steven Matz, going into his relationship with the Cardinals, had been viewed as a bridge lefty reliever, he's not getting $12 million a year. It's just not happening. That's not how the market works. Now, maybe this is why pitchers and their agents want to be starters if they can be, because those number four, number five starters are getting 3-4-5 year, five-figure a year guaranteed contracts, whereas the Ryan Helsleys of the world are scrapping in arbitration, and that, you know, the highest paid, what does Edwin Diaz get? Like, he got like 3 years, 60, something like that. You know, which is a lot of money, but it's just still his guaranteed dollars. He only got, you know, $10, $12, $15 million more guaranteed than Steven Matz got. You know, when he's at the time, he was at the absolute peak of his profession, if you will, being a relief pitcher. And Steven Matz was being signed as at best probably like a number three starter and more realistically a number four. So you can understand why guys would want to be starters. Anyway, it's getting a little sidetracked from Liam Doyle. I think my mindset would be, unless the Cardinals were in a position where they felt they were a Liam Doyle in the bullpen away from being genuine World Series contenders, and he wasn't ready to come up as a starter, I would never pitch him out of the bullpen. I just wouldn't do it. And I don't see a scenario, I would love to be wrong, but I don't see a scenario where between now and when Liam Doyle is ready to start in the majors, the Cardinals become a Liam Doyle away from World Series contention team. I mean, what is it going to be until Liam Doyle's ready to make his major league debut as a starter? 2 years? 3 years at the most? Probably anything more than 3 years would be pretty disappointing, considering that he's 21 years old already and has multiple years of college experience, SEC Pitcher of the Year. I mean, you're drafting this guy probably with a hope that he's in the major leagues in some form during the 2027 season, and probably that he's a full-time major leaguer by 2028, 2029 at the absolute latest. I would think that's your goal. I mean, by that point, he's turning 25, and that's that. You know, if you don't draft a guy number five to be making his major league debut at 27 years old, that's just not the game plan. It might work out that way. There are late bloomers. You know, you could be a contributor at whatever age. Somebody like Brent Rooker is an example, a guy who was passed over in many ways and didn't click right away in the major league level, and now is a two-time All-Star and is in the Home Run Derby tonight. You know, but what I'm saying is, if you imagine Liam Doyle is becoming a major leaguer in plan A or B in the next 2 to 3 years, I don't see a Cardinals roster that's one great relief pitcher away from World Series contention in the next 2 to 3 years. So I don't think they're sacrificing a whole lot by allowing him to develop as a starter, getting him there as a starter. The last thing that you would want is get him to the majors and he's having to sacrifice development on that those third and fourth pitches and really fleshing out his arsenal because he's got to focus on his primary pitches as a major league reliever to get big league hitters out, or that he gets to the majors as a reliever and he has a really negative experience and now you're having to deal with that mental side of getting those headlines, getting that kind of media attention, taking that hit to the confidence, having to go back down to the minors, back to the starting rotation, and piece it back together again. Again, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but this is going to be part of the conversation at some point. So although it's fun to talk about, oh, Doyle could maybe be part of a bullpen if you needed him even this year, certainly next year, it's fun to have those conversations because so often the Major League draft feels very removed from the Major Leagues itself because it takes so long. I mean, a guy like Ryan Mitchell, he might not make it to the majors for 7 years, right? You hope to see him in 3 or 4, that would be great, but 5, 6, 7 would not be a surprise at all. You know, that's still, he'd be 23, 24, 25 years old at that point. He's a young kid. So sometimes it can feel like there's so much delayed gratification that we want to unwrap our presents now. Liam Doyle's under the tree and we don't want to wait another couple weeks. But, in the broad scheme of things, I think it's probably in the Cardinals' best interest to do whatever is most important for Liam Doyle's development. And if that marginally hurts the 2026 Cardinals in a wild card chase, not going to lose sleep about that. But this is something that we can talk about with a better informed man in Brian Walton, who covers the Cardinals minor league system for thecardinalnation.com. Maybe ask him about Nolan Church as well, the outfielder down in Memphis, who Bernie was raving about during Redbird Rush Hour and whose analysis maybe contributes to Bernie's opinion on trading Lars Nootbaar potentially and why that might be a good option for the Cardinals. Brian can weigh in on all of that coming up after the break on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line continues on this Monday evening. Nate Gatter in for Matt Pauly during the Major League All-Star break. And we are joined now by Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com. That's thecardinalnation.com. There's no All-Star break for Brian and for the folks who cover minor league baseball because the Major League Draft took place over the last couple of evenings. The Cardinals have made their 21 selections, 20 rounds, plus a competitive balance pick. Brian, thanks so much for being with us on KMOX. We appreciate you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be on, Nate, and you're right. It's a very busy time. It's really Christmas for those of us who care about the minor leaguers and this great infusion of talent that's going to be coming into the system.
You know, I was talking with Bernie Miklas on Redbird Rush Hour earlier this evening, and we were talking about how the fact that the Cardinals are the only team with a winning record that only has one representative at the All-Star game is in some ways representative of a narrative that has grown around this ball club over the last decade, really, which is commonly having having a lot of good players and not having enough great players. And part of that is because it's really hard, especially for a mid-market team, to go out and acquire great players, whether because the trade cost is high or more commonly because the free agent cost in salary and guaranteed dollars over a long contract is just too high for a market like St. Louis to commonly guarantee. And as a result, that leaves the draft and development where the Cardinals have just not been poor necessarily, but have taken a step back undoubtedly from where they were for so often. Their hope will be, or for so long, I should say, their hope would be that Liam Doyle, who they selected at number 5 overall, a pick that they sort of locked into through the lottery, certainly got a boost, and then kind of lucked into with some of the chaos in the first couple of picks that folks did not expect, it can be one of those guys who becomes a dude and goes from not just a good player, but makes the Cardinals a team that has one more great player.
You're right, Nate. And, you know, think about the situation last year where the entire Cardinals rotation, and of course, this was when Gibson and Lynn were still there, but the entire rotation was made up of players that were brought in from the outside. And the Cardinals just don't have a business model that they can afford to pay for that kind of talent to have the kind of rotation that you need to go deep into October. And so, you know, what we're seeing with the pick of Liam Doyle and some of the others, Tanner Franklin and others in this draft, the Cardinals are really doubling down on pitching, and they're going after college arms that they hope can move fairly rapidly through the system, you know, and that will, you know, be able to contribute in St. Louis in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I want to touch on that because the Cardinals, not just on the arm side, but in total, they took 20 college players and just one high schooler, which is interesting. And then in particular, with those arms they took toward the top of the draft, in particular, Liam Doyle, also Tanner Franklin, who they took with the competitive balance selection, number 32 overall out of Tennessee as well. Right-hander who throws really, really hard. These are guys who could move very quickly, as you said. Let's start with Doyle. What do you think is a reasonable sort of best case to worst case, ceiling to floor arrival time for Doyle in the major leagues?
Well, we've seen players, you know, like Michael Wacha in the past get up to double A, maybe even touch triple A in their first full season after being drafted. Now that would be next season. So, you know, an optimist could look at 2027 and say, you know, Doyle could be an impact guy at that time. But that's, you know, getting the cart way ahead of the horse. But, you know, what the Cardinals really did in this draft is they drafted guys with triple-digit heat. You know, and not just Doyle, Tanner Franklin, 100. Cade Crossland, their first pick today, he only max outs at 98. So, I mean, they're going after guys that are going to get strikeouts, and you hope that they have, the kind of season that Quinn Matthews had last year where he led all the minor leagues in strikeouts and moved through the system very quickly. Now, you know, Matthews has slowed down this year, but, you know, they're looking for more guys like Matthews and Wacha before him that'll get to St. Louis as quickly as possible. But on the other hand, of course, you know, you can't rush a player either. He's going to tell you when he's ready based on his level of performance against his competition.
Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com is with us. You mentioned the velocity and some of the swing and miss ability that these pitchers, the Cardinals took, especially up toward the top of the draft, bring to the table. For a while, we used to hear consistently from the Cardinals brain trust at the major league level that they viewed themselves as sort of zigging while the rest of the league zagged, if you will, that they were going to take some guys who were more pitch to soft contact because they thought those guys were undervalued and paying for defense was undervalued. And you could essentially pay for soft contact and great defense, and you could accomplish those two things less expensively than strikeouts because the rest of the league was paying for strikeouts. Do you think this draft is an indicator maybe that they're pivoting from that a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that goes back to Dave Duncan, you know, to that era. And it was a very successful approach for a long, long time. But the sophistication level of defenses And the stats that are available to help players position are so much better than ever before, and it puts more and more pressure on those defenses. And, of course, the best way to avoid any defensive problems is to strike out the hitter and not put the ball in play. And the Cardinals drafting fifth overall allowed them to get a talent like Doyle. I personally am glad they didn't go for a hitter, not that a polished hitter or even one of the high school hitters that were available wouldn't have been a bad pick, but they need help on the mound. And this is a guy that has accomplished everything at the highest level of competition, is a bulldog. I mean, a guy who's striking out over 15 strikeouts per nine innings as a starter is almost unheard of. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure, I'm sure, on Doyle, just like there's been pressure on J.J. Weatherholt, who was the first-round pick last year. But so far, Weatherholt's answered the bell, and I'm sure the Cardinals believe that Doyle will too. Now, I asked him specifically last night, Doyle, what his workload has been since he's finished his college season, because it's been about 5 weeks since Doyle's last pitch in a game. And he said he's continued to throw on the side, throw his bullpens. He just hasn't gone out and thrown 100 pitches every Friday night. But Doyle says he could be ready to go in a week. It'll be interesting to see if the new player development regime that's in place under Rob Serfolio and Larry Day and director of pitching Matt Pierpont, whether they're going to baby guys their first year or whether they're going to, you know, drop them into action right away. And I shouldn't say baby guys because, you know, these college pitchers have thrown a lot of innings in the spring, and stopping for a while and then restarting again is dangerous and risky. But, you know, another way to move guys quicker to the majors is to put them on the mound right away after they're drafted.
Yeah, you talk about moving guys quickly, and you've mentioned a couple of names of college players who are moving quickly through the Cardinal system already in Quinn Matthews and J.J. Weatherholt. You know, with Doyle, one of the things that we've heard already, certainly you'll hear it with Tanner Franklin, because I think a lot of folks feel he projects as a bullpen arm long term. But one of the things that we've talked about already during the course of this show earlier, and I think folks elsewhere are talking about too, is the prospect of potentially getting Doyle to the majors initially as a reliever, the way the Cardinals have done with some other top prospects in the past. Do you think that's something that they would consider, or is that maybe going out of style as well with some of the new regime?
I think it's going to depend a lot on what their needs are. You know, when that happened before with Dakota Hudson and I think Carlos Martinez, you know, some of those guys were good enough to go in the rotation, but the Cardinals felt that the five that they had starting were solid enough that they didn't want to displace them. Mm. But as soon as you have an injury in an opening, then plans change. And so, you know, I don't think that they'll necessarily, you know, have plan A be that Doyle might come in as a reliever initially. But, you know, if he's clearly one of the best 13 pitchers coming out of spring camp in, say, 2027, you know, it'd be foolish for them to not put him on the roster and give him a chance. Now,
right.
The downside of that is once you take a guy out of a starting routine, it's kind of hard to get him going again in that routine during the course of the season.
Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com is with us. Brian, you know, so much talk about Liam Doyle, and understandably so, because the Cardinals just don't draft number five overall every year. In fact, they do it almost never. So, it makes sense that people would be enamored with that name, that they're able to get that high up in the draft. Is there anybody, especially maybe outside of those top three, four, five names, who stands out to you either because of great value or for some other reason?
There's a couple of guys. One of them is a guy we won't see for a year, and that's Peyton Graham, a right-hander from Gonzaga. He had Tommy John surgery in April, but this is a guy that has a mid-90s fastball up to 98, a couple breaking balls, a really solid young pitcher, but the Cardinals drafted him at 210th overall in the seventh round, realizing that he's going to have a year to rehab. There's a guy they took in the 10th round, and this is a profile that the Cardinals went after this year, too, and that is a multi-inning reliever that the Cardinals think, hey, maybe they can enhance their repertoire enough that they can be a starter. And I'm talking about Ty Van Dyke from Stetson that they took in the 10th round. This is a guy that's 6'2", 255, tops out at 95 to 97, a good slider as well. And so, you know, it's not just starting pitchers, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, Nate. They're also looking at reliever types that they might be able to either turn to pitchers or, again, move through the system relatively quickly. And that's why a lot of their focus was on college players.
did take a couple of, well, a few small college guys, but in particular, a couple of non-Division I guys, pair of D2 kids, Jake Shelagowski, pitcher out of Saginaw Valley State in the 13th round, and Chase Heath, a catcher from here in the state of the University of Central Missouri, was their final selection at number 20. Shows you that scouts can find you wherever you are.
That's right, and the Cardinals pride themselves in having, you know, scouts that that do the job, not only finding the players, but then understanding what their makeup is like and whether they're a player that would be suitable to be in the Cardinals system. And Shelagowski is another guy, set the single-season saves record at his school, and so whether he's a starter or maybe he's a fast-moving reliever. And then, you know, using their last pick on a catcher, Chase Heath, Randy Flores is very high on Heath in terms of his leadership. And he's a guy, if you look at his numbers, he's won a gold glove defensively, but also is, you know, hit like in the 370 range. So, you know, a last round pick sounds like a great one for the Cardinals to use. And in the past, they had a lot of times late in the draft saved a pick for a high school player that was hard to sign because it's sort of a safety valve if they couldn't sign their top players. They didn't do that this time around because they believe that they're in good shape in getting these top guys under contract. And they only have 2 weeks to do it. The signing deadline is 2 weeks from today on the 28th. So yeah. Flory's work and his team's work is not done.
What I'm hearing is your work is not done either. There's going to be a lot of news now to follow the, even though we're through the two nights of selections, a lot of news over these next couple of weeks. Brian, I really quickly want to touch on one other thing because it came up during the Redbird Rush Hour when we were talking to Bernie Miklas earlier this evening. You know, one of the things that he has discussed is the possibility of the Cardinals trading Lars Nootbaar if they got the right offer for him, in part because the outfield is just a little bit crowded and has been a little bit crowded for the Cardinals, in part because he's one of those names who has drawn significant interest around Major League Baseball in the past, and in part because of Nathan Church, who Bernie is really excited about, and with good reason. I mean, this kid has torn the cover off the ball across nearly 60 combined games between AA Springfield and AAA Memphis this year. 943 OPS at Springfield, 1,026 OPS at Memphis. What's the buzz around Church right now?
Nathan Church was a guy, you know, not unlike Nootbaar. You know, he wasn't drafted in the first day of the draft, didn't get a big bonus, and was known for his defensive skills. I'm talking about Nathan Church, a very, very good defender, but wasn't able to necessarily hit with the same type of offense that you needed to be a major league starter. And he's been able to improve his hitting against both right and left-handers to the point where he was the Texas League Player of the Month in May, and then he was promoted to Memphis. His first month with Memphis, he played even better and was our Player of the Month across the entire system in his first month at AAA. Now, I don't know if Nathan Church will be able to hold out that, but certainly he has thrust – he's one of those players that's really emerged this year and thrust himself into the picture when a guy like Matt Kopierniak, who has a 40-man roster spot, has sort of slowed down the other way.
Well, that's a great insight, Brian. We appreciate you. People looking for more of that insight, you can see Brian's work at thecardinalnation.com. You can follow him on Twitter @X @B_Walton. That's B_Walton. Brian, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You got it, Nate.
Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com talking Cardinals draft with a little bonus there in the discussion of Nathan Church, AAA outfielder who Bernie Miklas says could be pushing the Cardinals to make him part of their plans before too long. We'll take a break, and when we come back, touch on the Club World Cup and what that might say about the World Cup coming to St. Louis, or rather I should say coming to the United States next summer in 2026. That's still to come. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line. We're wrapping up on this Monday evening. We'll be with you all week long as the Cardinals have four straight days off for the All-Star break. Nate Gatter back with you in for Matt Pauly. Don't forget to join us tomorrow evening, 5 o'clock Redbird Rush Hour, 6 o'clock Sports Open Line. We'll be talking a little bit about the Cardinals' deadline outlook as it stands now, a couple of weeks, 2.5 away from the deadline at the end of the month. We'll be talking more St. Louis City as well, some of the roster additions, a couple of moves made to bring in some players. Of course, this is a roster that feels like it's been in flux for City for, I don't know, over a year at this point. We've been talking about trying to fit the pieces together and make things work again. Bill McDermott will join us as well to talk about the U.S. men's national team, who came up just short last week in the Gold Cup, lost 2-1 to Mexico in the final in Houston. Where are they headed into the World Cup on home soil next summer, especially with the drama that surrounded the U.S. men's national team and how many high-profile players missed either through injury or, more notably, for drama purposes, through just opting out from participation in the Gold Cup this summer, and the limited opportunities as a result that the first-choice 11 is going to get to play together before arguably the most important soccer tournament in the history of the U.S. men's national team, certainly the most important soccer tournament in this country since it was last here, the Men's World Cup. So at minimum, the most important in decades for the U.S. men's national team coming up next summer. Along those lines, though, we'll also talk a little bit about the Club World Cup, which ended yesterday. FIFA has sort of been trying to grow the Club World Cup and make it feel like more of a big event as opposed to summertime friendlies. They brought the Club World Cup here to the United States, club teams qualifying from all over the country in all kinds of convoluted ways, which is part of the reason the Club World Cup doesn't resonate with people, because the team that ultimately won it, Chelsea, qualified not by winning the Premier League, not by winning the FA Cup, not by winning the League Cup, any of the traditional qualification metrics. The system is a little bit convoluted in that way. But the more interesting thing at this point is that I think the tournament finished with a little bit of a flourish, some big name teams making it to MetLife Stadium in just outside New York, Chelsea and PSG in the final. Chelsea scored the 3 goals early and rolled in the end to the victory. There, I think, has been mixed reception. At times, you know, you're playing games in really hot stadiums, which the players didn't like, in stadiums that are mostly empty because games were being played during the day on weekdays and a lot of people were at work. Tickets were also expensive. FIFA was regularly slashing tickets by huge amounts in the lead up to games, even the face value. There were people at the game who had also bought their tickets directly from FIFA, who potentially paid 10 times or more what the people sitting next to them did if they bought their tickets 48, 72 hours apart. So there were a lot of red flags, I think. And so I wonder if the Club World Cup had its intended effect at all, which was to sort of serve as advertising, if you will, for the World Cup next summer coming to the U.S. to kind of boost the anticipation, the interest that's going to be there, because the ticket prices for the World Cup proper are going to be even higher. They are going to be astronomical. And I wonder what that market is going to look like. I imagine for the U.S. games, for the Mexico games, it's going to be very strong. For the high-profile matches, say from the quarterfinals on, when you're seeing your England against Spain, France against Germany, you know, those types of matches, I would anticipate that those markets will be very strong, even among American fans, that there will be a lot of desire to see those. I mean, one of the things we've seen across sports in this country and worldwide is that arguably demand to see A-list sporting events has never been higher around the world. We talked in the first hour with Mike Monaco of ESPN about the Wimbledon championships. The men's final yesterday between Sinner and Alcaraz, the cheapest ticket, the get-in price on the secondary market was over $20,000 per ticket. Now, that's unusual, right? That's the biggest tennis match. That's the top two players in the world playing in the most celebrated tennis match in the world. So that's unusual in that way. But nonetheless, the demand is astronomical for live sports in person when it's truly A-list events. And I think that will be true here. I wonder if what attendance is going to look like if you have, I don't know, you know, the right examples. If you have Scotland against Honduras in Phoenix at 1 o'clock on a Wednesday, you know, how is that going down? And we're going to find out, I suppose. But I think it's going to be very, very interesting. And I doubt that FIFA is tremendously satisfied with how the Club World Cup went. I'm more interested, obviously. I don't really care if FIFA makes money or not. They're going to be fine. I don't really care how many people go to the games or not. I'm more interested in seeing the U.S. Not just play well, but be in a position to feel like they did everything they could to play well. Like they didn't leave things on the table with sort of self-inflicted wounds in preparation, which it feels like the Gold Cup might have been. And that's going to be a focus of our conversation with Bill McDermott, which will come tomorrow evening here on Sports Open Line. If you can't be here to listen to it live on 104.1 FM, 1120 AM, you can listen to it live or on demand in podcast form on the free Odyssey app, as you can with all of our content, including free live Cardinals baseball if you're here in the St. Louis area, and St. Louis City soccer. All of that is on the Odyssey app. Final thoughts when we come back to wrap up Sports Open Line here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Wrapping up Graybar Sports Open Line on this Monday night. Nate Gatter back with you in for Matt Pauley. Kyle Sixta is running things in our downtown studios. Hope you've enjoyed now almost 3 hours of straight Cardinals talk, going back to Redbird Rush Hour with Bernie Miklas, as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. Special thanks to all of our guests, Jen Cease, Mike Monaco, Brian Walton, for their contributions on City, Wimbledon, and the Cardinals draft, respectively. A lot of exciting stuff to talk about. You know, as a result, we didn't really get that much into just where the Cardinals are. That's something that we're going to talk about a little bit more tomorrow, because it's such an important part of how the Cardinals are going to handle the trade deadline, which was always going to be the pinch point of this season. You know, I think since the very beginning of the year, I've talked about it as essentially the Cardinals season is going to end on July 31st, and then we're going to wake up on August 1st and start a new season. And either that's going to be a new season where the Cardinals are now just an also-ran and we're focused on young players and what's to come in the future, or it's going to be a season in which the Cardinals now consider themselves a playoff team, and any playoff team has to at least internally think of itself as a contender. And those are really the two options, and you hope that the Cardinals just pick a lane. And I think they probably will. Unfortunately, from 2 to 3 weeks ago, it was looking like the Cardinals were almost certainly going to go down the, if anything, buy a little bit, within reason, conservatively, frugally, you know, at the deadline, to now I think you'd have to say it's more likely they sell than buy. Again, within reason, I don't think it's going to be a fire sale, but you want to try to recoup whatever value you can. I mean, certainly if by some miracle they could get a couple of good starts from Eric Fetty and get something for him, you know, Ryan Helsley has a bunch of value. I don't know that everybody is looking at Lars Nootbaar as a likely trade candidate, but I think Bernie Miklas' thoughts that he gave us this evening do make some sense. And part of the reason that he would make sense to trade is because he wouldn't be at the a name that's on the tip of the tongue of Cardinals fans saying, trade him, trade him, trade him. Right? Cardinals fans would rejoice if Eric Fetty got traded, I think. But part of the reason he's not going to get traded is exactly that. If you want to get something worth getting, you have to give something worth giving. And you know, not that Eric Fetty couldn't still turn it around and contribute, because I think for stretches, like Bernie said, I think last year when the Cardinals made that trade, it was a good deal. You know, I liked it. I think they got good value, and I think it made sense to bring him in. It just hasn't worked out, in particular this year. But, you know, sometimes that's how these things go. Helsley, I have a hard time, unless the Cardinals rip off a few wins between the end of the All-Star break and the deadline, and they're not going to get many opportunities, right? Probably a dozen games. Unless they rip off a few wins, I have a hard time thinking that John Mozeliak isn't going into that last week before the deadline thinking Ryan Helsley it needs to move. Because you just can't, what you can't have happen is the Cardinals end this season, don't make the playoffs, and lose Ryan Helsley for nothing, when they could get at least one, maybe two solid prospects in return from somebody. I don't know exactly what the market is for him, as we talked about with Bernie earlier. You know, the market for him coming off last season would have been phenomenal in the offseason, because he pitched like a truly elite reliever in every way. This year, his numbers are not there. At the same time, I think he is clearly still an A-lister relative to the options that are likely to be out there. And teams that are in position to contend are usually willing to pay A-list prices even for an A-minus guy. And so even if you think the numbers, especially some of the numbers Bernie was talking about, the 400 average against the fastball, the worse induced vertical break, those kinds of things hurt his value. Even if those are a minus, he's still an A-minus type of guy relative to what else is out there. And if the Cardinals, you know, can induce some kind of overpay, or even if they can just get a fair price, I think you have to strongly consider making that move, because with the Cardinals placing the emphasis on youth that they have, you can't go into next year without Ryan Helsley having not gotten anything for him, and thinking about how those guys might have been able to help the team over the longer term. So that's going to be part of tomorrow's discussion. We'll also on Wednesday be visiting with Derek Gould, who I think will be able to sort of give us a bit of the state of the union, if you will, of where the Cardinals are at, because it feels now a little more confusing than it did. I think there was so much optimism, and then the Cardinals have been so streaky over the last month going into this break. They've had a couple of really rough weeks. They had a nice winning streak and run in there. It's been a yo-yo back and forth, and right now they're at the low end of it, which is just a couple of games, five games over 500, and they've been able to stretch that more like 10 games over 500 at times. So I think if they were at the top end of that yo-yo, we'd be having different conversations right now about how the Cardinals should be ready to strike, you know, even if it's the first day out of the All-Star break and they get the right offer for the right guy, they should be ready to strike. Now I think we're preaching caution, and John Mozeliak's job in many ways gets even harder, because the only thing he can do right now is wait even longer and try to get as much information as he can possibly get before he makes the moves. These things will be continued points of discussion. Redbird Rush Hour tomorrow, 5 o'clock. Sports Open Line, I'll be back with you in for Matt tomorrow at 6. Thanks so much for being with us. To our guests, Jen Cease, Mike Monaco, Brian Walton, to my producer, Kyle Sixta, Nate Gatter, saying so long. This has been the Graybar Sports Open Line on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.